And now, beautiful people going fast on fire. Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast, Kino Club Edition.
Welcome to True Fiction's Kino Club, where we discuss movies old and new. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Dune Part 2, which is a 2024 American epic science fiction film directed and produced by Denis Villeneuve. He co-wrote the screenplay with John Spates. It is a second of a two-part adaptation of the 1965 novel of the same name by Frank Herbert, and is a sequel to Dune from 2021. It follows Paul Atreides as he unites with the Fremen people of the desert planet Arrakis to wage war against House of Harkonnen. But before we get started, Kino Club roll call. I'm Pat.
I'm Norbert.
I'm Marshall.
All right, I think there's quite a bit to talk about this movie, but maybe not the movie so much, but I know that we had a movie-going experience that we rarely have. We actually got to go together to a theater, and we'll talk about that later. But what were our first impressions of Dune Part 2?
This is a movie that really needs to be seen in a theater. Even if you have the best sound system in the world, I'm not sure you're going to get the bass rumble that you would get in a theater. And the power of the sound and visuals are integral in terms of what I liked about this movie. I liked what I saw. It was amazing to see. And it also felt, this is a rare movie, at least in the action sequences, where this felt pretty much like stuff I would read in a book. A lot of times when you're watching a movie, you can just feel the sort of the hand of a screenwriter or director or who snap get coordinator or whoever, just do it. Like when our hero hides behind the feet of these, is it a mining machine?
Early on, the big spice.
But gatherers. The way they used that in order to fight the helicopter thing felt very much like something I would read in a book as opposed to what I normally see in a movie. I like that. I liked in the action scene towards the end, the climactic one, there was real danger for the hero. I thought that was an excellent thing. And any movie that has Christopher Walken in it, there's a plus for me. I love to see him on screen. I think that'll sum up my first impressions.
I think overall, I enjoyed the film. I think my first impression is I agree with Norbert that this is a film that should be seen in the theater. And I think this one, comparatively to the first one, had a lot more action and a lot more just engaging moments. And the plot seemed to move along a little faster with this one. I think there's this weird thing that happens, in my opinion, with movies that are the source material is a book, to where you can see some things that don't translate as well in film, because when you're reading them, there's an entertainment value on pondering the event that's happened. And sometimes it's not like a massive event, but it just has more weight to it when you read it in text as opposed to when you see it in film. I have not read the source material that this is based on, but I think this second one had enough action that it kept me entertained. I did pick up on a couple of those moments where I felt like, oh, this was probably in the book, but didn't translate as well to the movie. But overall, I enjoyed the film. And I think I enjoyed it for just the spectacle of the cinematography and the action and just some of the relationships that were built. But I don't know if I could say the same about maybe the story or the plot, if I was as big of a fan, which is unique, I think, because a lot of times I like a movie story first and then the rest follows, where this one I feel maybe the opposite about.
I enjoyed the flick. I liked a lot of what was going on. I read the book, although it's been a while, and some of it made sense and some of it was like, I don't remember if this was in the book or not. But I really liked Villeneuve's take on the story itself. I thought he kept it rolling. One thing he did, and I think this was to get you settled into this is not an action movie, although there are some really great action scenes. The movie starts off and it's very plotting, and it's getting you ready for these people in the desert that are, they have to be very precise and plotting. And I think that kind of pulled me into the movie, which I enjoyed that. And I do think that this was an audio and visual feat of Hans Zimmer did the music, and I loved how subtle it was. His soundtrack, sometimes you didn't notice the music was playing, but it was still in the background, and it was putting you on edge, and you don't even realize it. Definitely, this will be a classic, as the Frank Herbert book was a classic, and I don't know if I'll ever read another one. And if Villeneuve keeps making these, I don't think I'll have to, because I just as soon watch this movie. I thought that he did a good job. Yeah, that's my take on this. The original movie in the 70s, I think it was in the 70s.
I think it was mid-80s, because it had Sting in it.
Was it mid-80s? Okay. All the Harkonnens were gingers. So did you like the gingers better than the baldies?
Yeah, that's a question I guess I don't have a whole lot of passion on, let's just say. But I will say,
such a deep question. Yeah, such a deep question. How could you not?
Let's just say, just if you ask me that, do I prefer gingers over baldies? I'll say yes. 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 I'll go with that.
Wow. That is a little bit on the edge right there. I don't know. Send your hate mail care of Norbert.
If that's not a correct take, then I'll take the arrows for that. That you mentioned, though, what I was thinking about that was the fireworks in the Colosseum at the Harkonnen when the gladiator battle. I thought that was cool because it felt so different than what I thought when we were talking about what we like. I think that felt like something unique. It felt like it was almost like a ink splatter. It didn't feel like any fireworks I'd ever seen. And I thought that was really inventive.
Yeah, I'd forgot about that, but you're absolutely right. It was very different. I've never seen anything like that. So it was very interesting.
I read in the book that the planet the Harkonnens are on has a sun that the way it burns causes things to look black and white. And that's why it was all black and white on the planet. But then when they were inside, it was colored. And I thought it was interesting.
That's a good point. I thought it was just, it's funny. Sometimes you think this is something they missed. They didn't color it in, but no, they knew what they were doing.
It felt that the director didn't phone it in for whatever its faults and successes. He was very interested in honoring this. Between the two movies, what is this, about 5 hours or 6 hours worth of airtime?
Probably. This one was 165 minutes.
And this will lead into one of my criticisms, but I will say this, the director did try to, I think he was very much trying to craft a tale that was honoring the books.
Absolutely. And I felt like he, from what I remember the books, I felt like he did a really good job of that.
This was a summer blockbuster in terms of the visuals and sounds in March, which you don't normally get. But when they're riding on when he's trying to ride the worm and he's calling for it and he's riding it. And that was amazing visuals and sound. I was totally into that part, man. That was so cool.
It's easy to get caught up and the effects were just amazing. I didn't see anything that said this was an effect. You know what I'm saying? All looked like I could forget about it. And the screen, so we watched it at the Imagine Theater in Fishers, Indiana, and it was on their version of the IMAX. And it was gorgeous, and the sound was amazing, and the seats reclined and were heated, and it was just a great theater experience. And that helps. There's no way I could have watched it in my little theater here and let my two hams, they would have been numb as can be by the end of an hour. So I'm really glad that we got the chance to do that. And it really made the viewing better. So I really appreciated that. And I think that's important, too. There's some movies I'll go see at the regular theater and some movies I'll wait. But I'm really glad. I think you both said it. You got to see this at the theater. And I really, really would agree with that.
I wanted to mention, so you talked about Hans Zimmer doing the music, and I got to watch a brief interview about how he picked some of the music and what he decided, some of his artistic choices, and he included some of the musicians that helped on it. It was very interesting, and there's things that he did that I didn't realize it was part of the score, but it added to the environment. So there's a part where the emperor's army, I can't think of what they're called, the Sardaukin, are they're creeping up and are marching on in Dune, and they have these masks
Sardaukar.
On. Sardaukar. And yeah. They have a flute player play, but they're just playing kind of muted, winded notes. So it almost sounds like the breathing and stuff with it. And it just adds to the environment of being very creepy. And then they also talked about there's a part in the first one when the spaceship that lands and a guy walks out with bagpipes, and it's actually a guitar player that mimics that. And the guitar player we've actually seen live in a band called the Aristocrats. It's Guthrie Govan. Yep.
Wow. That is awesome.
So that was pretty cool to see and find out. And it showed him playing the guitar, but it was mimicking the bagpipe sound. And they said that they used a similar sound throughout a lot of it too. And it was just neat to see the elements of how they were built together. And then it really brought you back into, and it showed how much the music of a movie, I think especially in this movie, really adds to the environment, and how much of it the feeling of the movie you just take for granted. You don't even think about the music or the soundscape of it. And it, so that was really, I have a new appreciation for that after watching this interview.
I really think that's the way to do it. When the sound gets too much, too in your face, then it pulls me out. I really love the sound, the way the sound was in this movie. It was awesome. And of course, not just the music, but the sound of like big things hitting, people marching, the big machines. The sound was phenomenal, just so good.
When one of the things that I thought they did well in this is the sense of scale. Things felt big. The environment felt big. When you see these armies, when you see the Colosseum, when you see the worm, when you actually see them, they felt huge. And the sound, I think, has a big part of that. But just the scale of what was shown, because sometimes movies, I've seen movies where they try to show you digital armies, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it doesn't feel grandiose. And this did, at least it did to me.
It was, I think it's interesting. The budget for this movie is $1 million. That's a lot of money. It's made $384.1 million. That's not bad. That's basically getting some of your money back. And the way this movie's going, I think it's probably going to make even more money back and be in the positive, basically.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, because I think that this is the kind of movie that, while I have some bones to pick with it, I thought overall was very interesting. And another thing that I liked about it was one of the themes, I assume this comes from the book very heavily, is the idea of using faith and religion to move people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. I thought that that sort of theme was interesting, and I appreciated the sort of sober view that they presented on that. They didn't make it cheap. They didn't look down on it. They just said, this is how you do it. How the mom and the prince, or is he a prince? He was a prince, wasn't he?
I don't know. He was heir to the throne, basically.
But anyway, I thought that was interesting, that theme. And the little things like the mom talking about how you get the weak ones to follow first. I thought that was a really interesting look into how people actually function.
There is a mix of religion and politics. When you get in later books, that plays really heavy on it. I think that's a very interesting part of the underlying story. If anything made me want to read the next book, Dune Messiah, that's it. That politics and religion. The Harkonnens don't act like religion means anything, but they honor the Bene Gesserit, the women priest. So I think that fascinates me. So we've kicked around what we like What didn't we like about this movie?
I think the cast of, what's her name, Zendaya?
Zendaya, yeah.
Like
Madonna.
Yeah. I just don't, I don't find her a compelling character in this. I almost feel like it's a drag. It puts a little drag on it for me. And there's some good cast in it, but she's a miss. And I still, I'm the person that always complains about length. If you're going to go this close to the book, you need to split this up into three movies. Between the two movies, there's got to be at least 5 hours of airtime and probably more, six, five, at least five. And I just felt like either that or there's some scenes I think you could trim up and still tell the story. I think the Colosseum scene, while really cool, felt like they was there for an hour. You could probably trim that down 10, 15 minutes and still say what you want to say about that character. I'll start with those two.
I agree with you on Zendaya. I don't think she really added a lot to the film. I don't know if it's because I knew what was going to happen or she just, I didn't care for her character, how she was acting as that character. I wouldn't have had a problem if she wasn't in it. But I really liked Austin Butler, who was Fade Rafa Harkonnen, the one that ends up fighting Muad'Dib Deeb in the end. I don't know what it was about him. And part of it is, I think his father was the one in the oil bath, the one that played Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, Stellan Skarsgård. I didn't even catch this. I actually seen this on a video. He was imitating Stellan Skarsgård's voice as the way he pronounced the stuff as the Baron, and blew away Stellan Skarsgård. I thought that was pretty cool. And I thought he had a lot of gravitas on the movie. I thought he was really good. Now, when we go back to the 80s movie, that part was played by Sting. And I'm sorry, that guy, Austin Butler, outclassed him. Not that it's a contest, but Sting, he would have lost. And I just really, I really liked his, he was evil, but I really liked his character. Now, as far as the time, I'm going to say on this one, I understand it was long. But for me, it was as long as it needed to be. I wouldn't want to trim a second off of it. I liked it. I think the length and the way that they told the story in kind of a slow manner in places really helped to pull you into the movie. And I wouldn't have wanted it to be broken up because I think that would have taken you out of it. And then you'd have to get back in to, on the second or the third one or something. It's probably not going to go down as my favorite movie in the world. But as piece of art, I think this thing is solid, almost bulletproof. But yeah, I didn't like Zendaya. There was a lot of show, don't tell, which is great. That's the way it should have been. Part of this is Paul Atreides becoming the man that he's supposed to be. And I really didn't feel that change so much. I seen how they were trying to show me that, but I didn't really buy that.
I don't know if that's what they're really trying to portray in his character change. That was the way it was leading. But then in the end there, it revealed, I think he definitely changed, but he's not the person he set out to be, was the takeaway that I got. But I agree with you in the sense of, I don't think Chalamet is the guy to, I don't think his range is deep enough to pull off what was needed to be portrayed in that chain. And I don't know if it's just his looks or his demeanor, but he comes across as like a scrawny kid to me. And at the end of it, I was still like, oh, he's a scrawny kid, but now he has blue eyes.
Is it his cute smile, locks of black wavy hair? I don't know. There's a lot of different things about him.
Hard to say.
One of the things I thought about is, I get that part, what you're saying. I almost wonder, was he, and this is a meta question, I suppose, did he believe that he was changed, or was he playing a character so that the rest of the people would buy into who he was?
I think that's a fair question. I just never seen him act like he was ever doubted what he could become. And other people said that he was doubting it, but I didn't really see it in him.
One other thing that I will say that I'm not too crazy about, and that's the whole bath scenes. At this point, I've got such a bad revulsion at Saltburn. So anytime I see a bath scene at all, I'm uncomfortable. Oh,
I want
to
see.
I'm like, move on. We need to move on. I need to go away from this. This is bringing back some bad memories.
Now I really want to see the Baron get out of the tub and empty it and have that Saltburn kid come in and clean up afterwards.
That's in the extended cut.
Yeah, that's the extended version.
You got to save something for that.
Thank goodness they didn't. Here's a good thing I like. They didn't have that kid in to ruin everything.
Oh, gosh. Can you imagine him as some scavenger screwing up the whole thing and just bringing a movie down? Oh.
Yeah, I think he would have been
wasn't
a hard
that, wasn't that the Green Knight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he ruined that movie.
That's right.
For me, at least.
That's right.
Oh, sure.
I was in awe of the cinematography, and I consider it art in a lot of ways. I like the audio. I don't know if I enjoyed the story as much. It felt in parts like it double backed over itself a couple times. And I think these are things that you can get away with in a book, and you feel satisfied with the story because it's a journey of reading the book and you ponder what you just read. Whereas like, when it's happening in a movie, it's not so much of a journey as much as, you know, you're rehashing kind of the same ground. I questioned some of the like character motives too. It was hard to really place what were the characters' motives. Why were they doing the things that they were doing? And I think some of that you can get away with easier in a book, because a lot of times you'll read a book and you're like, oh yeah, things aren't black and white. I should ponder that. But in a movie, a lot of times I feel like there has to be hard choices for the plot to move forward. And so this, I think it made it difficult from the source material, because I could almost see the moments where I think there was probably more plot and substance in the book to think about than there was the actions that had happened in the film. And I'll give a couple examples. So spoilers, these are going to be some heavy spoilers. So turn off now if you haven't seen it, and then come back and listen later. And then share it with your friends.
Just going to talk about the AMC cup anyway, so it doesn't even matter.
And the popcorn oil gave me a rash. No, but from what I've read about the book, it is the idea that the mother is trying to manipulate the believers. And it's this, is he not the Messiah for the Lisan al-Ghaib? I think that's how you pronounce it. But then he does some things that are like when they meet and he calls those people out about very specific things that only he's seen because he drank the water of life. And I felt that's a pretty hard fork in whether he's the chosen one or not. They never really explained it like, oh, he knew this because XYZ and he was just playing into it. But at the same time, I guess the spice does give you certain powers. Or not telekinesis, but it was like he was having the dreams. He could see the future. But this really made a hard fork. He was like, I know this about you, and that's how I'm proving to you I am the Messiah. And
yeah, he could see the future and the past. And that's because he drank that water of life, or water of whatever it was. And only females were supposed to drink that. So that's what proved he was basically the
Messiah. But no, because that was not a black and white plot part, because he talks about that the House of Atreides, they are trained in poison transmutation. So he was trained, but
that's the meta article, the meta sort of question of the whole thing is fate put him into this role when he's really not a Messiah, or is he really a Messiah? And I think that's an interpretive viewpoint of it. But
that's exactly what I'm saying. But then when he does the, where he like calls people out on the specific things, proving that he's the Lisan al-Ghaib, It really puts a hard fork into it. It's no longer ambiguous whether or not. I feel like that was a pretty hard, hey, check this out. I am that dude. And then it's, oh, how'd he pull that off? Because everything else up to that was like, we had him talk about they practice poison transmutation. So that's an explanation. So whether if you believe he's the Messiah, that's why he was able to get through the drinking the water of life. Or if you don't believe he's the Messiah and his mom's just propping him up to take control, it's because as an Atreides, he had practiced poison transmutation. So those were like ambiguous things that left it up to the viewer. But I felt like when he was in the meeting hall and he calling the people out, there wasn't anything that explained how he did that that left it ambiguous.
Oh, we're going to get the drinking game going on ambiguous today?
Ambiguous, all right.
Ambiguous.
All right.
Another thing, ambiguous.
But yeah, here's my only thing.
That's mighty ambiguous of you, Marshall.
Well, I was just going to say in terms of that, let's say he has the training to fight the poison. Maybe that's what would happen to anybody that took the water of life in their mail if they could survive it.
I don't know. The way I see it is that he doubted himself. And I think that's what, when he said that, he was saying that, yeah, of course, I've practiced poison transmutation. Duh, like we all did. And I think that's what he was saying. I don't think this is going to happen a lot, but I say, you may be right, Marshall, because I think the book, the story, they want it to be ambiguous. They want you to wonder, although I think the cat was out of the bag at the end of the movie, but that's what they were still trying to find out. He had people, Javier Bardem, he had people that believed in him, and he had people that didn't believe in him. And I think he was on the fence most days. So
I really liked Bardem's performance of, like, when he was doing stuff and he was like, oh yeah, that's him. That's him. The sort of like him getting into that and really being real expressive, I thought was really fun. I thought Josh Brolin was really good in this movie on the things that I like too.
I've seen a meme and it's Paul. It shows Paul, then it shows Javier Bardem and it cuts to Paul doing the finger thing. Like it's, and then it shows Javier Bardem going, Lisa Valky. That's pretty good.
I love that.
And then I think the other criticism I had, like something else that I had trouble with the motives, is that we basically spent two movies building up this romance. And I know it's different in the book, but we spend two movies building up this romance between Paul and Johnny. And then the last minute, he's, I'm going to take you as a space bride. I claim you as my wife. Just whatever, Johnny. Like this woman who's been on the screen for maybe 10 minutes screen time. And we have no idea. He's just, you're going to be my space wife.
That was the politics of it. They were coming down to kill him. So now he basically combined some houses that now he's got an army to command. And I think the Freemen are going to.
Yeah,
know,
that was a purely political play. It was not a I love you chick. It was more like, hey, if we're going to survive this, we better get some political power.
I think they could have done a little better of a job of implying that. I think it just felt really funny. I love the idea that he drinks a psychoactive material, then he proposes to a woman in front of his girlfriend and knife fights his enemy.
Sounds like my uncle in Korea.
It's a busy day.
Yeah.
Definitely busy day.
Quite the day.
And really, that was what happened in the book. I don't remember if she was mad like that. I just keep thinking she understood, but it's been a while since I read the book. So
I also picked up in the movie when I talk about being ambiguous, I think there was like this ambiguousness about like with the way his mother acted after she took the water of life. And then the way he acted, it was, oh, are they coming into this power or were they just poisoned? And now they're acting crazy from the poison.
Or are they possessed?
Yeah.
Is sandworm infected with a sandworm? That's what happened.
Not Amityville, the Exorcist moments in there.
Yeah,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, what's our wrap up? Bottom line is, what would you say if somebody asked you to go see this movie?
I think if you like good epic adventures and you like watching big epic adventures on a big screen, go to the theaters and watch this movie. There's very few like this out these days. It has a few things that I don't care for, but it's still a huge thumbs up, especially in this climate. I feel like we've been in a desert. It's no Clerks.
Or Clerks 2 or Clerks 3, but.
But it's definitely.
Well, it's not a trilogy, so it can't
continue. Yeah.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But it's got enough movie time. My guess is it's probably, you put 1 and 2 in a Dune together with Clerks 1, 2, and 3, I think you probably have pretty similar runtime. But at any rate, I think it's definitely epic experience to see at the biggest screen that you can watch it on with the best sound system.
Absolutely.
I agree. I think I would recommend this movie. I think if nothing else, just for the cinematography and the world building that this movie creates with the soundscape. And I think, I don't know if I'm really sold on the story and plot and some of the character motives, but I think there's enough good about this movie that you can turn off your brain and still find a lot of enjoyment from watching it.
I think that anybody that likes a movie that you can feel emotions about, I think this is it. And if you like political intrigue, this is also something that you would probably like. Like I said earlier, it's probably not my favorite movie, but it's solid as heck. It's just a solid, good time at the theater.
Speaking of which, we didn't give a theater report, did we?
I glossed over. Do you guys want to talk about the theater?
Just a little. Yeah, I will absolutely. Say that this is the first movie theater I've ever seen where I saw people bring food to the people watching movies. And that's a first for me. The entire screen, the seats and everything were awesome. If I'm in Fishers and there's another movie to watch that's worth. Now, this movie was worth watching it at that kind of theater. Is it a chain of theaters or
it is a chain? It is a chain, but there. I think this is the only Indiana location. I think there's in Chicago, and then they have them on the coast. It's Imagine with an E at the beginning. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know.
That's how it goes.
I didn't know if there was more. I love that theater. That's a very classy theater and very comfortable. It has reclining chairs and heated seats, which is just amazing.
Why? I missed the urinals with plastic on top of it and fighting through the foliage to get to the theater from the parking lot. When you're used to that experience, well, this is weird.
The other thing about the Imagine Theater is you get such a great movie experience, and it's no more expensive than going to your local AMC. That's what I really like that about it. And they usually have specials on Sunday. They're just doing it right. And I really appreciate that. And there you have it, folks. Another episode of True Fiction's Kino Club in the books. Thanks for joining us for another round of Movie Madness and sharing your love for cinema. Don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. And stay tuned for next week's episode. Until then, keep your eyes and ears open for the truth in fiction. Good night.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the True Fiction Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit us at Facebook. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay true and stay creative.
Hey, you're too late. Catch a ride somewhere else. Catch a ride somewhere else.